Welcome to Dr. Lisa Solcenti's podcast. I am Dr. Lisa, and today we're going to talk about, should I test neurotransmitter levels? And if you go to my website on drlisasolcenti.com, you can see this article here. I have it written out too. There's links and things that as we talk about, you could see the links and, you know, follow them. But it came from a question from Alana from Connecticut. It's a great question. She says, Dr. Lisa, I feel like I'm going crazy. After so much research on my own and talking to other amazing mothers of children with anxiety, ADD, ADHD, or she says what I call autism spectrum disorders, what should I be supplementing my child with? I cannot decide between serotonin, GABA, glutamine, cysteine, glutathione, melatonin. Everyone seems to have a different answer, which makes me hesitate to do anything. What do you suggest? Thank you. Okay, first of all, Lana, breathe in and breathe out, because there is no one solid cookbook answer to that question. So really don't be hard on yourself. It's a great question, but there's no like one, you know, shop answer to it. My main answer before we dive into this is really never give any supplementation if you do not know what is deficient or what is high, or how deficient something is or how high something is. And what I basically mean by that is when you test any kind of, you know, chemical or nutrient, you're looking at a range that it should fall in, which would we call normal, right? That's the range. That's healthy. That's the normal range. In medical world, that's how we know if the level's good. And if it falls out of the range, let's say it's too low, we would call it low or deficient. And you might see that on a lab work when they flag it, right? And sometimes they get really specific with it might be in a yellow or it might be in a red. There might be a little flag. And they do this also sometimes if the nutrient's too high. So it's on the other end of the range and, you know, it's too high. Now, some nutrients are, you know, dangerous if they're high and some aren't. So that's a whole nother topic. But you really should know that. That's really what my answer would be. And that goes for any vitamins and nutrients. And of course, we're going to talk about neurotransmitters. You really just need to know what the level is or the levels are before supplementing. Otherwise, we're just really guessing. And the problem with it, it's not that the intent behind giving a supplement isn't good. It's just that you could be pushing a pathway into a different direction. For example, if you don't need a lot of folate and you're putting it in there, it could push the pathway somewhere else, or B5 or B3 or B12. Or if you're giving serotonin and you don't need it, right, you could just be getting an excess of something. And we're going to dive into that. So my main answer really is never give any supplementation if you don't know what the level is. So it's going to be low, normal, or high. And that is really, really key. I also want to talk about functional medicine for a second. It's a little bit different in our thinking in the functional medicine world than the medical world. And what we do is we tend to not just treat the one lab that comes up like high or low. So this could be for any nutrient. We're looking at iron, we're looking at, you know, serotonin, melatonin, B12, vitamin D, things like that. So let's say you had a lab work done and something came up in the red. Like, let's just say something's very deficient. We may not just jump in and just treat that one thing. What we want to do is what we call looking upstream and for a potential cause. So we're trying to say to ourselves, what would be causing this nutrient or this, you know, chemical, this compound to be low? Is there something that's causing it? Because if we can find the cause and we fix that, this nutrient may just, you know, balance itself out. And the way we look at it is if you're standing at a river's edge, right, and you see that there's dead fish in the river, you could treat that right there at the river, but you should look upstream and see if there's a reason why the fish are getting sick. Like, could there be a factory that's leaking something in the water, right? Is there something going on up the stream that's causing these fish to come down the stream and be sick? So that's what we do in functional medicine. It's a little different. We just don't see like vitamin D is low and we jump right into like giving you vitamin D. We want to look at the whole body as systems and see where the cause of it could be. Not saying we don't give vitamin D, just saying that this is our thinking. So when we're talking about neurotransmitters, you have to look at two things. So the one was what we just talked about. What neurotransmitter is too high or too low? So this would be through testing. And then what we have to look at, Alana, which is really, really important, what cofactors along the pathway may be dysfunctional. So they might be the cause, as we're talking about the upstream. So we're always taught to say, before we're supplementing something, what could be the cause of this problem? I'm going to get into the neurotransmitters and the cofactors, and I'm going to explain this in depth. But what I want you to understand before we get into this is that you can go to my website and you can actually order some of these tests. Or because the topic is quite confusing, you're not too sure what to order, you can always book a consultation with me and we'll sit down for an hour and go over the health history. And really, that's what I get a lot of information from that by talking to you and meeting you. And can decide which testing is needed. And so that's really what you have to really do. But there is a at-home urine collection neurotransmitter test. You can just order yourself online. I love to bundle that one up with the micronutrient test because those are where the cofactors are. So a lot of these vitamins and minerals are needed for the neurotransmitters to be made. And I do also like the MTHFR test. That's a genetic mutation that could put you at risk or your child at risk for having difficulty with some of these pathways. It might be a cause or something that we need to address. So there's a lot that goes on here, but I do love the neurotransmitter bundle with the micronutrient bundle test together. It's a bundle. It's called the neurotransmitter and micronutrient bundle. And that's on my website. So you can order the test straight up without having to see me. But I always recommend booking a consultation with me so you have an idea of where to go. But some people know, or some people have met with me. If you're already a patient of mine, you may have already met with me and we're on a path together and we're working to get you or your child better. And you might know the next step in our plan. So they are there now. I do say that this is an informational, educational podcast, and so are my blogs, that it's not to treat you. If you order the test, you're ordering them. And you do get a review with me too in the test, but you haven't really become one of my patients until we really commit to that. So this is for informational, but it's got to have a lot of information. So let's dive in. So what do neurotransmitters do? What are they? If you're just new to this, you're like, I don't even know what she's talking about. What are neurotransmitters? They are the chemical messengers that transmit messages or signals from one neuron to the next. And the neurons are these little ends of the nerves, and that's how we communicate. So messages are going to go down the nerves, and at the end, they have these neurons at the end. There's a space between the two, and it's called the synapse. And it's actually these little messengers or these chemicals that go from one to the other. And they regulate a wide range of events in the body, such as mental performance, focus, emotions, pain, energy. So think of them as the messenger center of the brain. And these neurons, they talk to each other and they send information about the body, sleep, mood, blood pressure, heart rate, attention, all the things that we've just mentioned to one another. And how do they do this? They do this by sending messages from one brain cell to the next. They actually store messages in these tiny little areas at the end of the neurons, and they're called synaptic vessels. So the space is like a synapse, and there's little vesicles in that area where these messages can be stored. When they become live, they will go into the space and excite or energize other neurotransmitters in this little synaptic space we're talking about. And that's how the messages get sent. They're kind of exciting each other. And so they create a chemical messaging reaction where one brain cell will release a neurotransmitter and relay the message along the others. And this goes through the nervous system. It's kind of really intricate and amazing if you're into the land of this area. Symptoms of an imbalance can be mistaken for other things. And this is quite common when we're in the area of like ADD and ADHD. I do know that it can be quite confusing when someone isn't focusing or something's going on. We know in the world that it could be other things. So an imbalance in sex, your sex hormones, some kind of infection, definitely gut problems, which we're going to get into, metabolic syndrome issues, chronic fatigue, stress, And even sometimes with ADD and ADHD, like it could be a visual problem, a hearing problem. Like there's lots of things that can go on where you think it's a neurotransmitter, but it's something else. Again, that's why we look upstream. The neurotransmitter lab test panel provides a comprehensive assessment of these neurotransmitter dysfunctions and the relationship in the body. But what I love is we look at the cofactors. And this is what's really, really important. And I want to get into that part. So really explain this, Alana, to you and everyone else, why it's so crucial to not just look at the neurotransmitters, but to look at the whole big picture. Let's look at glutamate. So glutamate is what I call the on neurotransmitter, the exciting one. And if you think of a light switch, if the light switch is on, and I talk a lot about this in my lectures, you're on, the nervous system is on and it's being stimulated. So it's an amino acid actually that stimulates neurons to fire messages and send the signals in the brain throughout the nervous system. It's found in the diet, and when this is all working properly, glutamate released by the cells picked up by what's called the glutamate transporter molecule, and it's just making sure that everything is working out great. And the brain uses glutamate to build pathways between the neurons, and these reinforce things like your memory, helps you learn. Neuroplasticity is really important here when you're trying to, retrain the brain. It relies on glutamate. Too much glutamate, though, can be overstimulating to the brain and be quite troublesome. You could have too much glutamate in the brain, or you could have the receptors for glutamate being oversensitized. And that would mean that they need fewer glutamate molecules to get them going, to excite them. So that's not good too. Having too much glutamate in the brain has been associated with things like, you might have heard, Parkinson's or MS or Alzheimer's, ALS, things like that. So this is this area of the brain super important. And so therefore, knowing if your glutamate is too high or too low is actually key in neurotransmitter testing. And I talked about cofactors. You want to test those too, right? Because if any of these cofactors are too high or too low, it would tell me along the pathway of making glutamate where the problem could be. It's super important. For example, what we love to look at is if glutamine is going to go to glutamate, and then glutamate is going to go to GABA. So this is what we all know as the main thing people talk about is GABA. We need to look at glutamine, we need to look at glutamate, and we need to look at the GABA, and that's the pathway right there. So then I have to say, well, if GABA is low, is glutamate high? If it is, I know that the pathway problem is between glutamate and going to GABA. It also needs B6 to do that. So maybe it's a B6 deficiency, and that's why I like the micronutrient test with the neurotransmitter test. So I'm looking along this pathway. Magnesium is need, manganese is need. So these are things that are really, really crucial that you're looking along the pathway. Where is it a problem? Let's say glutamine is really high and glutamate's low, then I'm backing up along the pathway and seeing that maybe the problem is with the magnesium and the manganese. We don't just look at the glutamate levels alone. We look at this whole pathway, and we look at the cofactors, and we try to see where along the pathway is the glutamate messed up or off balance. So we talked about GABA. GABA is involved in this, and that's usually coming from the glutamate cycle. And if glutamate's the on of the light switch, GABA's the off. So it's the calmer, it's the inhibitory transmitter, which is the fancy word. And it provides the calming effect that will slow the brain down, right? So glutamate is exciting it, and GABA is calming it down. It does the opposite, lowering your heart rate and your blood pressure, helping you fall asleep. It's really the normal stresses of your life responding here with GABA. And that's really important because, like I said, if glutamate's high and GABA's low, could it be in that transition right there, which really needs B6? And so we have to look at that whole pathway, that glutamate, GABA, and then the nutrients and the cofactors that go along. Do you see why just giving somebody something isn't really the solution, right? So that's one great example. The other example we'll talk about is dopamine. And we're going to talk about epinephrine and right now those two together. So dopamine is a neurotransmitter, and that's more in involved in movement, right? And this is another one with Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a disorder known that uncontrollable tremors, problems with movement. It's also known as a mood chemical. It enters the synapse between those neurons when something rewarding happens. So it's like a pleasure reward. It's not necessarily the one that we're going to talk about mood, like happiness versus sadness. This one's more like you get this joy or this pleasure from doing something like a task. Like let's say you did a goal, right? And you achieved a goal and you get this rush of happiness. This would be what dopamine's for. So it's a mood chemical that enters the synapses when something rewarding happens. It doesn't have to necessarily be something good. It's just something that you do that you feel is good. And we're going to talk about that. It's responsible for happiness when you accomplish a goal by uplifting the brain and bringing this feeling of joy. The problem here is that it sometimes is a rush for people. And it can follow with feelings of depression, tiredness, and a lack of interest in doing things. So the trade-off really is you can get, if it's too much of a rush, and some drugs do this, they'll give you that temporary high of joy. And then when the drug wears off, you'll get a crash of sadness. So dopamine can be a very amazing neurotransmitter, but it also could be abused. Think about doing a happy activity, something that you love to do. It could be spending time with the family. It can be exercise. It could be a hobby that you love that helps increase your dopamine. So you're happy, right? It's a reward thing. You're doing something that gives you pleasure. But there's addictive things that actually could work on this reward center, and it's not good. So things that we all know right now is video games, social media, the phone, right? Gambling, even shopping, believe it or not, you could really get a high off these things. And because the rush of dopamine can make the brain want these things more for that feeling of happiness or joy, it can be very difficult to break bad behaviors, right? Or these behaviors that aren't the most healthy with you, especially if you don't realize that dopamine's playing an addictive role in what you're doing. So you have to be careful here. It does help with wakefulness and regulate your blood sugar and your insulin. It helps the brain also in create voluntary movements, which is like writing your name, typing, driving a car. And one of the things that's really important about dopamine, it's involved in what we call the HPA axis. And this is important to your question because the HPA axis involves the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the adrenals. And we'll get into this one more in another podcast. But it's basically your stress response system. And it, because it's involved in this, you could really affect your body's ability to handle stress in a good way or a bad way through dopamine. Now, in this one, it's got a lot, the pathway is pretty big. And so we look at the cofactors, which are going to be like phenylalanine, tyrosine, there's DOPA, and then there'll be things along the way like iron and B6, and there's some enzymes there too that are really important. And when you get to dopamine, you want to see if it's going to go to the norepinephrine and if it's going to get up a final spot where it's going to go in one pathway is epinephrine. And these are some transmitters that are super important. We also have things called HPA, NMN, VMA, B6, B2, vitamin C, copper, magnesium. So these are other things in this pathway that we really have to look at. And it's really my job to do that when I look at the neurotransmitter's finding and I look at what's high, what's low, and we want to do it. HVA is an acid, and then there's just all different things. There's metabolites and there's neurotransmitters and there's enzymes and there's vitamins and minerals that play in this part. So it's really cool. So that's the pleasure one. Epinephrine is like adrenaline. It's another word for adrenaline. It's that fight or flight. And that is when you get scared, right? And you're like, and you run. So adrenaline sets the body up to basically run and protect yourself. The neurotransmitter is responsible for the body's fight or flight response. It is also another catecholamine hormone, which means it's part of that HPA axis. So it has something to do with the adrenal glands, right? And in times of stress, it makes the heart beat more strongly. It diverts the blood away from the middle of the body or the gut and gets it out to the limbs. So you're ready to run. it's a body's defense mechanism against stress too. So if you're running late or you're really nervous about something, adrenaline's going to be the thing that kicks in and makes your breathing and your heart rate, increase. It's supposed to sharpen your decision making and help your body and your brain work together in a stressful response. But we do know that if we get overstressed or something gets really scary, it's going to just be the fight or flight. This is the thing that happens with panic attacks, right? And anxiety, it just kind of overtakes you. And that it kind of does. It really is what it's meant to do. But the detrimental part is when this becomes a chronic stress over time. If somebody's chronically stressed, this can affect the body's stress response in a very negative way, where you're constantly going to be in fight or flight. It's very, very, we're going to get into that in a podcast, because there's things we can do for this. There's things we can help this. And this is what I mean about looking upstream. We could give all the neurotransmitters we want to somebody. If there's something going on with stress or there's something going on with the gut, we could be, or this HPA access. There's really got to be something that has to be addressed. So there's a lot here. So a healthy balance is obviously key with adrenaline. And we test this with cofactors, again, such as these neurotransmitters and metabolites. And this would be the PEA, the DOPAC, the HVA, the NMN, the VMA. They're just other cofactors. Tyrosine's another one. And we're going to look at iron and B6, B2, C, and copper. Very similar, and magnesium to dopamine, because it's the precursor before that. So we're going to actually look at dopamine too for epinephrine. All right, serotonin, which is what a lot of people talk about. And this is the mood one. This is the mental health one. It's known as the happy transmitter, neurotransmitter. And it's sending messages between brain cells to regulate your mood. So low levels of serotonin in the brain, they've been associated with depression and sadness, right? Because if you have serotonin and it's balanced, it's promoting a feeling of happiness. And when it does that, it also allows for healthy sleep, healthy rest, super important in the body for many, many reasons, but definitely for having problems with that HPA access. This is because serotonin also is really, really crucial in melatonin. And melatonin plays so many roles in the body. It's one of the most important things in the body. And I didn't even realize this till I got into functional medicine, how important serotonin is. And serotonin cycle is quite interesting, because we're dealing with tryptophan going to 5-HTP, which goes to serotonin. So I have to look at that cycle right there. If serotonin's low, is it too much? Do we have too much 5-HTP? If I have too much 5-HTP, I know it's not converting to serotonin. What if 5-HTP is fine and serotonin's low? Then I have to look at tryptophan. And again, when you look at amino acids, you have to also look at the gut, because you have to say to yourself, same with vitamins, is the body absorbing B6? Is the body absorbing tryptophan? Is the body absorbing tyrosine? So, you know, if you have a leaky gut and you have gut inflammation, you won't be absorbing the nutrients you need for these pathways and these cofactors, but you also won't be making neurotransmitters. 90% of serotonin is actually made in the gut. It's not made in the brain like that. So this is just so fascinating. And a lot of it comes down to the last thing I'm going to leave you with, because I like to keep these at the 20-minute factor, but this is such a fascinating topic. We're going a little over, but I'm going to talk about the gut-brain connection in a minute. When we do serotonin, the serotonin in our gut promotes also the feeling of feeling full, right? So it helps keep your appetite in check. It helps keep your mood and your sleep and your happiness. If you know you've ever gone through depression, it's a cascade of problems, right? So they can't sleep, you can't rest, you can't focus, and it's just a cascade. Too much serotonin, not enough serotonin can create a lot of problems with depression, and then that's a cascade for problems. Some illegal drugs actually can cause the brain to dump all of its serotonin into these synapses at once. It's super dangerous. And you can get a crash later, and that's called serotonin syndrome. You can have paranoia, impair your judgment, negatively impact your memory. You have to be careful with some of the drugs, too, that they use for neurotransmitters, ADD, ADHD, because they mess up with these things. And that's why a lot of people come to me and like, the cocktail they're giving them just isn't working. And that's because they're not really looking upstream. It might not be that the reason, you know, you have a low neurotransmitter might not be the way to go. I'm trying to say might not be just to give that neurotransmitter. It might be to look upstream and see what's going on. So serotonin goes to melatonin. So you're going to look at that. If serotonin's fine and melatonin's low, we're going to look at that pathway. And you're also looking at SAM, and you're looking at acetyl-CoA, and you're looking at 5-HTP, I said, iron, B6, copper, B2, lots of cofactors in this. It's a beautiful pathway, that one. Okay, the gut-brain connection, and we'll leave you here. And I'll wrap it up and give you a place to go. There's a plethora of scientific studies today that link the gut microbiome to how we think, we feel, and we act. The gut-brain connection is a real thing. And there are thousands of species of bacteria, trillions of the cells in the gut that play a crucial role in our neurological functions. And you can relate these to that Asperger's, autism spectrum disorders, anxiety, depression, ADD, ADHD, memory, all that. And there's also evidence now that most of our neurotransmitters, as I said before, are made in the gut. And that is super important because if your child or you have an inflamed, leaky gut, you may not be making the neurotransmitters or absorbing the cofactors, which would be the vitamins, the minerals, the amino acids that you need to make the neurotransmitters and also for those pathways that we just talked about to work. That's where we're looking upstream. And if you have deficiencies in cofactors, your neurotransmitter pathways aren't going to work, right? If you don't have the neurotransmitters, the neurotransmitter pathways aren't going to work. Right, so your brain isn't going to have these cells, these neurons that we just talked about aren't going to have what it needs. So I hope I drew a good picture. I know I may have mentioned words where you're like, I don't know what she's talking about. You don't really need to know all this. This is my part. This is what I do for you. But I want you to understand that when you have, you know, these messengers in the brain and they need so many cofactors, it's how crucial your gut is. And the last thing I want to leave you with, if the gut wall is damaged, if you have damage in that gut wall, which we call leaky gut, inflammatory particles will be released from the immune system in the gut. And these are called cytokines. And they will, or they can, leak out of the gut into the bloodstream and get to the blood-brain barrier and create neurological issues too. So we know now that we can have these inflammatory particles get into the blood-brain barrier. So we not only have maybe a neurotransmitter problem or a neurotransmitter pathway problem, but we have inflammation problem in the gut and the brain. And another factor that we have to talk about or consider is that HPA access, the immune system activation in the gut, which is secretory IgA, and we have to consider MTHFR. We have to consider the micronutrients, which would be your amino acids, your antioxidants, your vitamins, your minerals. And there's also something that we'll talk about in another podcast called the vagus nerve response. So there's a lot there when you're talking about the brain. So I highly, highly recommend determining if you have a leaky gut. If you don't know what a leaky gut is, go back to one of my podcasts. I talk about it. It's all over my websites too, in my blogs. But there's a couple podcasts on leaky gut. And we talk about food sensitivities, we talk about microbiome, and this is now the neurotransmitter part, because this is the house of the neurotransmitters, where they're born, their little womb is the gut. So that's going way upstream and looking there and starting there. And I hope if you have a question or you need help with this, I can help you determine what the cause of the symptoms you're seeing. Remember, they're symptoms, depression, anxiety, inability to focus. These are symptoms of something not right. So I hope I can help you determine what that is, determine if there's a leaky gut, and ultimately balance your gut-brain connection. And I strongly recommend to do a consultation with me, and we can start there. It's the best place. If you are educated in this and you've been around the block and you kind of get where we're at with this, again, you can check the website. There's labs there for you. That's about it. And I love that question. I hope it helped you. Have a great day.